Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to our show, the Neil Baker Psychic Hour. I'm Kristen. Good morning, Neil. Here we are Monday morning, the Monday after Christmas. And we are going to be broadcasting back-to-back this week, Monday and Tuesday. And we are discussing the essential questions of existence. In 15 minutes or less, we're going to cover this topic. It's a fast food lesson, everybody, and we are going to be getting to your calls. Several of you in the queue, we do discuss and confer for about 15 to 20 minutes before we start taking calls. So we do ask that you keep your place in the queue. We're going to be getting to everybody that's waiting. We invite you to participate, of course, in our discussion as well. What else? 914-338-0164 is our call-in number for those of you who are considering calling in and listening. You can follow us right here on Blog Talk Radio and Facebook. There are two accounts, Neil Baker Psychic, and you may follow us or send us a friend request on Neil Kristen Baker. There's also a Twitter account, Neil's direct number, 562-596-7818. Okay, so kind of a heavy topic for the end of the year, but it's a good topic to get our heads together, because you know, with the holidays, people get distracted by materialism, by getting in the earthly walk in life. Sometimes some of us have distant relationships with our family, so we can get frustrated and get involved emotionally in that aspect. But when we look into the real reason for existence, we find that maybe those things aren't so important.
Well, I think it's the essential question to ask, of course. And this goes back to the beginning of time, essentially. As soon as man started to ponder his existence in terms of those old cave drawings, or ponder existence in terms of connecting to nature, there was that question as to what is a human being's place in the universe and in the world. And when we ask the essential question, even pertaining to our show, as to what is the nature of existence and what is the main question regarding existence, we have to define, first of all, actually existence itself. And existence itself,
obviously,
we exist.
Right.
We breathe. We eat. We learn. We do the certain things that we all do as human beings. So the fact that we exist doesn't have to be defined. We simply exist. But what we tend to get away from is what is the true meaning of existence. The baseline is there, and I consider the baseline synonymous with what I call linear existence. Linear existence is the first concept of existence. And most of us operate on a linear level of existence. And you may ask, what is a linear level of existence?
So
a linear level of existence is
life, birth to death.
Birth to death is that we have this one lifetime. And everything we do and act and respond to and create is all based upon this lifetime.
Right.
And of course, on our birth dates, we analyze on our show, we analyze birth dates. And you can look at a birth date on a linear level from beginning to end simply as a concept of life in one lifetime, you can look at it more transcendently, and you can look at life more transcendently. Now, what is, so when we're looking at this linear aspect of existence, we define it as we are born, that's the opening page, and we die, that's the closing page. And everything in between makes up our existence, our families, our interests, what we do each day, that comprises our element of existence. And we can get by from birth to death without asking any questions about God or spirits. We don't need that to live. We need food and we need sustenance, we need shelter. God willing, we're in good health. This has nothing to do with the deep questions of existence. So the first question of existence has nothing really to do with anything beyond survival needs. That's the baseline. But of course, we're not here mainly to survive. So the question of existence becomes something more ponderous and more elaborate to consider when you start to ask, why do I exist? Merely to eat, to sleep, to have pleasure, to seek shelter, whatever it is. And so that's the first question. And from there, we get into the element, sometimes expanding, but still on a linear level of desire. And right. Most of our callers are here calling about desire.
When am I going to get my boyfriend or job? When am I going to sell my house? Et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, no serious pondering questions.
I mean, once in a while. Once in a while, we'll get,
You know, people may say, that's not fair. You know, of course I think about existence, but I'm not going to call up and say, what is existence? You know, what the show isn't really structured for that kind of depth. So people utilize the show to meet their immediate linear survival needs. And that is inclusive of course, desires. What we want, we're entitled to that. But that doesn't really address the deeper issue of existence beyond a linear level. So what we're really doing is we're looking at the body of who we are. And you don't forget, the body can occupy the soul. So the body needs can say, well, I have a soul too, and I'm concerned about the earth and the people in the earth and I love angels and I think about the afterlife and things like that. That's the basic linear baseline of the soul. So when we get into this attitude of existence and we have different layers that we work upon, the body itself can move a little bit into the conversation of the soul, but still remain on a linear level. So when we go further into the attitude of the soul, beyond the realm of the body, we become less concerned about the earth, and we become more concerned at what I call, which is called cellular memory, the memory of all of our past lives, all of our existences, not just the journey of our body as it pertains to our lifetime, but the journey of our soul as it pertains to every wandering and journey and element that we've ever experienced, even insofar as just being on the earth level, more or less the energies that we experience between our earth experiences.
So your theory is that our cells hold all the memories of, not all the memories, but all the data of our past lives, existences,
yeah.
Not only our past lives in physical bodies, but our past lives in the astral realm.
Yeah. That begins to address the question of what is existence, because existence is beyond the linear measurement of time.
Well, let me ask you a question, because many people on the planet don't go beyond a linear life or linear thoughts in terms of their existence. They don't even tap into the idea of their past lives or journeys in other realms besides the earth. So what impact does this have on that lack of awareness have on the physical body? I mean, is there a negative impact if you don't have that cognizance?
Well, the metaphor for that would be, you know, I really don't care about the rest of my body, but I make sure that my fingernails are perfect. or my eyelashes are perfect, or whatever it may be. Yeah. So when you look at one part of a life, as though, you know, we tend to be so egocentric that we think the world begins and ends with our first breath and our last breath.
Mm-hmm.
We forget that the world goes on before, after we die, and it's been going on and on and on and on pre-birth. And the scope of that is there's something even before the earth was established. So we tend to think that the center of the universe is us, and that it begins with our life and ends with our life. We don't really care or really matter. And I'm not trying to minimize people out there that have social consciousness or an attitude that, hey, listen, I'm aware of the universe. You're insulting me. I've got an awareness beyond my own body and my own scope of time. I don't mean to imply that. What I'm going to get into is the deep conversation that we all must share about what is existence and what part do we play in it on an internal level.
Right. So in answer to my question, is there a detrimental effect on the physical body?
Yeah, there is. Because if you concentrate on one part of the body, your other parts are going to suffer. And people tend to do that. They tend to neglect the holistic approach to life and just look at one aspect without considering that we are a whole unit. So when you look at just one part of the body, when you just look at one part of life, when you just look at one existence and not take into account the totality of existence, which is beyond the scope of the ego, then you're missing a big picture, and you're not going to be able to have a fulfilling life, because parts of your past lives and parts of your what you're supposed to do transcendently on the planet is going to be vacant from your consciousness. It will be in your unconsciousness, but that's like getting a leak of a drop of water out of a faucet when you need a full glass. So to me, the idea of expanding on that idea of what existence is, you have to take an holistic approach. And that could, now we're talking about beyond the body. What's beyond the body? What is within the body that is beyond the body?
Right, because we carry that all in our chakra systems.
The chakra systems are the control panels of our soul. A doctor is not going to find them. You can go into the body as deep as you want. You're not going to find a chakra.
Mm-hmm.
We don't pull them out and repair them and put them back.
Some people do. Psychic. There is chakra. Have you heard of chakra removal? People talk about chakra removal in terms of like a psychic surgery and so on and so forth. Mm-hmm. I know that we are not proponents
I'm
of that, but
medicine.
You're talking about Western medicine.
Yeah.
But I'm just veering
of
into
course.
That topic. But
of
you don't,
course.
I mean, even still, you don't really remove a chakra system, whether it's Western medicine or
you can't. I mean, you can't remove a chakra system It's like
the appendix or something.
It's like part soul, people think.
I know.
But they're ignorant.
Right.
But they're embedded in the soul. They're in the soul energy. And they are spinning. Now there are extensions of chakra systems. A chakra can put out a replica of itself in an extended energy, just like we have an energy field, or we leave a fingerprint behind. There can be extensions of our chakra systems that can help to define what our astral realm is all about, and the readout of that, which it also implies the compounded definition of what existence is, because now we're talking about that existence includes the journey of the soul, and the journey of the soul can't be comprehended without the ability to use your sixth chakra and your brain and get outside of the box of your thinking and start to formulate a direct and concrete dialogue about what is existence outside of the box, which is something that, you know, we ponder all the time, most of us, or at least people who are endowed with some kind of sense that there is another universe out there, another realm out there to consider that is actually livable.
Right. But, you know, as I mentioned at the beginning of the show, it can be very distracting being on the planet, and we get involved so much in our day-to-day lives and our problems and so on and so forth, and it can really drag our energy down. So keeping these higher thoughts closer to our
it's paramount.
It's very important because it really does help raise your vibration. Talking about vibration, I mean, motivating your thought processes to a higher level is really a great way to do it. And if you start to attach to these ideas and theories, I think it really helps lift one out of depression, because you start to really get in tune with what the existence is about. It's not only about, you know, what's going on, you know, in your personal life.
Yeah. I mean, depression is nothing more than the grounding of the ego. We're so involved in our ego that we forget the higher concept of the universe and existence itself. You know, my typical question sometimes I ask my clients is, what is your definition of existence? And can you get turned on by the very fact that we exist and that this vast universe is awaiting our consciousness, and that our inner consciousness, our consciousness has so many tools and keys and elements of knowledge in it that we have yet to begin to tap into. I mean, we talk about the final frontier on the planet as being the ocean, that we haven't really, we really haven't tapped into the ocean. We really haven't tapped into the subconsciousness of our being, because that holds the cosmic cellular memory of everything that's out there in the universe. So, you know, to me, the answer to the existence of the theory of existence is to take it from a linear standpoint to a cellular standpoint, to an expansive, transcendent standpoint, so that we get out of our ego, we get out of our body, and we start to get involved in the element of a soul-spirit dialogue. Now, that is where existence begins, beyond the scope of a linear life.
Okay, Neil, we've got some callers, so we can stop for now and continue tomorrow if you'd like, because I think we could use a little bit more time on this. Or is it over?
Well, it's never over.
It's never over. Okay, so 404 is our first caller. They don't have their hand raised, but I'm thinking if they're waiting for this long. All right, hello?
Hello.
Hi. Who's this?
Hello, this is Charlotte.
What's your name?
Charlotte.
Charlotte?
Yes, can you hear me okay?
I'm not too well. There's like voices coming through your call that are in the background, so.
Okay, can you hear me better now?
It's very faint. What's your birth date?
Hold on. Okay, my birthday is September 24th, 1958.
1958?
Yes.
Okay. Welcome.
Hi.
9, 10, 11, 15. What's your question? Where are you calling from, too, by the way?
Alabama. And I have just started, last week I started doing some past life work to clear up some things, which I was sure didn't start in this lifetime. I found something that someone had, well, a relative actually, had put on another plane in that lifetime. And I'm basically kind of looking for a direction of how to remove it from that plane.
So I'm sorry, I don't think we're clear on what exactly, it's because you're in and out, the voice is in and out. So Can you just speak loud and clear and state that again, please?
Okay. I started doing past lifetime work.
Oh, okay.
I found what a relative had did something back in the 1700s.
Okay, and so are you conducting these past life regressions, or are you going to someone to...
No, I'm just doing this through meditation.
On your own, okay.
Yes, yes. There's no one in this area that even knows what that is.
Right, Alabama. Probably not a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, some kind of karma had to pay off. Hold on just a minute. Oh, Mama, I'm on the phone, okay? I am so sorry.
That's okay. So you have conducted, and you found out someone in your family in the 1700s had done something. Where, what had they done in the past life?
Accepted so that I would not find another love.
Think they put a curse on you or something like that?
Yes, basically. That's it.
Okay.
And that's what I said too.
And you want to know how to remove that?
Yes.
Well, the energy of removing a curse, given that there is an actual curse on the element of your soul, which is the, if the curse was placed in the 1700s, Charlotte, that means that the curse is in your soul, on your soul energy. And so it's not, if it's truly a curse and you feel like it's a curse and it's not something that is just occurring because of the dynamics of who you are and how you've been brought up or what your good luck or bad luck is in relationships.
Which he's a 3811 too, I want to point out,
yeah.
Which is already shows there's going to be a problem.
Because of the numerical value. The energy of that is that you have to go kind of go inside your energy and do a cleaning job. You know, some people tend to think that by you remove a curse by doing something outside of the body, like
sage.
or you're going to have somebody do a blessing over you. The curse is not outside of your body. It's within your soul.
Okay.
And that soul, what happens if you go into a past life and you attach yourself to the dynamic or the circumstances as to what brought about that curse, and you get into the full narration of it, you know, was it because you destroyed something that person loved? Did you do something of karmic value to that person? Did you betray the person? Because the curse is usually...
What was that?
Their perception of it is that I did.
Yeah.
I don't think I did, but it's their perception.
Well, it's hard to, unless you're really in the hands of a good sound guide, or you yourself have such acute awareness that you know exactly the circumstances of what occurred. And otherwise you're left with a kind of generalized feeling that something may have happened and you're not really sure what the details are. The way to go into that element would be to go into the depths of your sixth chakra and start to clear the energy. And you do that through the attitude of guided experience with angels and other aspects of the astral realm that have an ability to clean within. And that demands a certain narration about forgiving, and forgiving yourself, forgiving others. The attitude of love within yourself can wash away the residue of a curse or the intensity of a curse. So I think there's elements of forgiveness, there's elements of love, there's elements of letting go of the past in terms of not that you may not know all everything you did, but the very fact that you're having an internal dialogue with your higher self or your soul, and you're attributing that to the audience of spirits and guides and angels and God, then there can be an act of release from such a curse. So that's one thing. Another release from the act of a curse is doing good deeds. Good deeds can release one from a curse. And attributing your life to the sanctity of life itself and the welfare of others can release yourself from such a curse. So you don't have to be necessarily bound to a curse. Curses are broken. They're made and they're broken. But we have to get into the dynamics of what that is, Charlotte. But this is the groundwork. This is the simple groundwork as to how you can release yourself from a curse.
Okay.
I don't know. Does any of that make sense to you?
Yes. All of it makes sense to me.
Well,
that's encouraging.
You also have to understand the nature of a curse, because the nature of a curse can be in a relationship. It can be with money, business, belongings. a lie, a betrayal, an accusation, you have to kind of consider what the intensity of the curse, where it was from. It can even be something as gross as a murder, you know, or a sacrifice, or an execution.
Well, I did have one person helping me with this, and they sent what that person sent, like, when I was working on it, was that she had this false sense that I had taken her love from her, but I did not. This was just her perception of it as we saw it.
Yeah.
We could have been wrong.
Well, you know, I mean, we are who we events occur by not any one event has a concurrent element of consensus. We bring to an event what we interpret it as. So how we see life is based upon what level we are in our existence. So you don't have to be confined to this person's sense of interpretation, their interpretation of the event. You can elevate it to a higher degree of love and forgiveness by the very fact that you as a human being has positioned your soul into a higher place, and so you perceive it and release it at the same time. So I would
now,
suggest...
The person that did this curse has caused me problems throughout this lifetime. Actually, this person didn't even want me to come into this lifetime. They tried to prevent
well,
this
know,
lifetime.
Charlotte, what would be interesting is to, you know, at another point, because we've got a lot of callers, but to get the birth date of this person and maybe start. Do you have the birth date? We'll spend one more minute.
I know she's a Libra. I think it's
We need a specific birth date because it's numerology, not astrology. So the specificity of information is important.
I don't know. I can't. I don't know.
Charlotte, is you can either call back on another show or you can contact Neil directly and maybe have that information if you could research it, and that would be more helpful. But we do have to move on to other callers, but hopefully that preliminary information will help you out a little bit.
That will help me quite a great deal. Working through my sixth chakra will help me quite a great deal. And
okay.
I will call back with that information.
Thank you. Yeah, definitely do. Thank you so much. And Charlotte, you can follow our show right here on Blog Talk Radio. Again, 562-596-7818. We'd love if you joined us on Facebook or Twitter. And good luck in Alabama. Never been to Alabama.
Well, you need a banjo.
Go on your knee. Ha, ha, ha. Okay. Our next is 407-256. Good morning.
Hi. Hi.
Hi,
Laura.
Oh, hi, Laura.
Laura from Orlando.
Yeah, hi. She's a 2911 too, but I don't have your birth date.
It's 4/24/81.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay,
and
what's your question, Laura?
Well, I wanted to ask about me and my son, our connection on a soul level.
Okay, great. What's
past
his birth date?
3/11/2006.
Well, look at that. The reduction of your karmic number is in his day.
Birthday,
11,
yeah.
4, 5, 6, 7.
You know, this is
13,
simple,
4.
Laura. It's not that hard. Numerically speaking, you're a 2 and your son is a 4.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's your first two numbers, 4 and 2, as well as your day, 24. So,
yeah.
In other words, your son's master number and your master number matches your first two numbers, and they also match your second and third numbers. Now, that's karma. You have a past life energy with this person, and the energy of this person involved the heart and the sexual energy. So the heart and the sexual energy can be, you either had a relationship with this person in a full-fledged relationship, like lovers, or it's the second time you gave birth. Your son has a higher master number than you, 4, you're a 2, But you, of course, in this lifetime, you become older, that you're older than your son, but your son is based upon a higher master, number four. However, it's made up of 13 years of karma. You're a compounded person, 29, 11, 2. So that means that you've probably accumulated in your lifetime a divorce or a separation. Is that true?
Yes. Me and his father are not together.
Oh. Yeah. So you see, and so you and your father, you and his father, the father of your child, are not together, and that would take a whole other analysis of numerical interpretation. But the essence is that you are with your son, and that's based upon a past life between the attitude of heart and sexuality. But sexuality also involves the act of creation. So there's that to consider, Laura. Your son, there's some kind of baseball element. I don't know why baseball is doing that, but is there any baseball interest in this lifetime with anybody around you?
I'm trying to think. I mean, really simple, like plastic ball and bat. We used to do that, me and him, and at my parents' house. But also, I think his dad takes him to the batting cages. Like, they don't play baseball, but they go to batting cages, I think, him and his dad.
Mm-hmm.
But he doesn't watch baseball or anything like that.
Yeah. Well, it brings up the aspect of games, and games are very tribal in the past, in our past history. Games brought about the leadership qualities and competitiveness, and a lot of games were involved in hunting and all kinds of things like that. Do you have a pet animal? Do you have a dog or a cat?
We have two dogs and a cat.
Yeah. So what I'm starting to analyze here is that your journey with your son involves a past life tribal journey that probably this is, in a kind of a whimsical fashion, I think this is the second time you gave birth to your son. Mm-hmm. So this wasn't a relationship based on love in terms of man to woman, but this is a second relationship where your child entered the world through your womb. And that was a karmic situation that had to do probably with the father who was also involved in the past life. But that father could have had even extramarital affairs. It's a possibility.
Hmm.
Does anything like that has ever surfaced?
No, not that I know of. I mean, at this point, it's so far behind that I wouldn't even care.
Did he remarry?
No, not anymore.
Did he remarry?
I'm remarried.
You remarried.
Yes.
Okay. So that somebody got, I knew somebody got remarried. I couldn't figure out which of the two individuals. So I'm not going to go into any more detail about that because I'm starting to figure out where the pieces are falling. But yeah, this comes from a past life situation with your son. You had a past life with him. It was tribal, and there was conflict in it at that point in time. Your son is what, 12 years
nine.
Old?
No,
wait a minute.
He's nine.
What am I doing? Your son is nine?
2006?
Oh, yeah, 9 years old. So he's gone through two cycles. Your son has gone through two cycles. Did he ever have any difficulty in school?
Yeah. It's hard to explain. At first, they thought he was, like, dyslexic and he had trouble concentrating, this, that, and the other. But at the same time, he's, like, top level in reading. And on another aspect, they're, like, evaluating him for gifted. He's just eccentric. Like, I get what they mean. His mind moves really quickly, but he writes slowly, and if he doesn't feel like doing it, he doesn't do it. Yeah, he's had troubles on and off, but...
Yeah, that's what I'm picking up on. So, you see, what happens, Laura, as we get into this, the narrative gets deeper, there's more validations going on, then it turns into a full-fledged narration, a story that involves more aspects of karma and why you two were back on the planet and what it's all supposed to mean. And then we just keep getting deeper and deeper into the elements of time. There's also some part of the journey where your job occupation and the trouble that you had in jobs is intermingled with your past life journey with your son, and that becomes part of the journey. Were you ever employed? Did you ever work?
Yeah, I'm working now, yeah.
And did you have a problem in the early part of your son's life with jobs?
Oh, yeah. He used to have asthma attacks all the time, and I'd get calls from the preschool, so I was always having attendance issues at work, getting written up, things like that for leaving, taking care of him.
Yeah, you see, we can go on like this forever, but it gets into a full-fledged narration. We're getting enough validations that I'm picking up on that amount to this past life connection you have with your son and the themes that are involved.
Okay. All right. That's really interesting. Thank you.
Thanks, Laura.
Bye.
Bye. All right. 407-927. I believe this is Michelle.
Yes. Hi, Neil. Hi, Kristen. Yes, I called the other day, but I realized when I asked you the question that I wasn't thinking clearly. So imagine that. So I wanted to ask you a little bit more about what I had asked you before. I don't expect you to remember, but I had asked you about 2016 and what you saw coming up, and you'd mentioned that all my academic pursuits would, you know, come together, and I'd be able to use all them, and I would be doing something with writing, something with publishing, and it would be very positive. And I said to you that I thought I understood because I just started doing something similar to that with a company. But what I wanted to know was it with the company that this is, or is it with myself? Because there's something that I've been wanting to do with groups, and it's kind of in my head, but I don't have it on paper yet.
Well, the aspect of writing has to do with two definitions, Michelle. One is your tribal obligation, which can include your job, and then your individual idiocentric attitude, your own energy within yourself that has to do with the trinity of your own body, mind, and soul. So when we're looking at this aspect, you in fact have two to consider: the attitude of writing for the group, which involves a karmic element on a tribal level, and then the attitude of your own individual soul, which is a whole different picture. That's why writing is such a solitary habit. Most writers hole up somewhere in a hole and they write and they stay away from the world as much as they have to be involved in it, and they're writing because they have to have material. But writing is a solitary job unless you go into a group experience or you write for a group. Screenplay writers and things like that, people who write for companies. That's tribal. And you have a division between the two elements, Michelle, that is demanding upon your psyche in this lifetime.
Okay.
So then I'm going to pursue both, that's what you're saying?
Yeah, both.
Okay. All right, and is there any advice you can give me on the one for myself?
Well, that's a whole reading that would demand a good full-fledged reading. You know, to get into the attitude of yourself, you have to go deep into your soul, and that can't be answered in a couple of minutes on a radio show. You have to go deep into your soul, and that demands a commitment on your part to investigate that journey. Now, you can do that with anybody you want. You can do it by yourself. You can choose a person that you trust. But that answer is not a quick answer. You know, it's not fast food material. You have to get into the depth of who you are and what you're doing down here and how you make that involvement count so that what you write has substance and transcends your very existence. And that is something that has to be, you know, dealt with on a deeper level. We talk about the depth of writing, not just, you know, card writing. or some silly poem that you write.
Right.
So
that's fair.
Know, yeah, that's what you got to go. That
okay.
would be my recommendation.
All right. Hopefully
thanks
that's
a lot.
Helpful. Okay, 561 is our next caller. Good morning
Hi.
Or afternoon. Hi, who's this?
This is Lena from Florida. How are you?
Oh, hi, Lena.
Hi.
What's your birth date again?
March 7th, 1962.
Okay, and what's going on today, Lena?
Well, there's a man around me. His name is Steve, and he's been wanting to pursue me, but he's been using the wrong tactics to try and get me to go out with him. And I just don't know why he's you know, using these manipulation tactics, why he doesn't just come forward and, you know, act like a true gentleman, like the way he says he is. So I'm just, if you give me some feedback on this guy, Steve, what's going on with him?
Do you have his birth date?
Yeah, it's 11/30/55.
Ugh. Oh, wow. He's a 25/7.
Yeah. Hmm. Well, you know, I mean, just because you're a 7 as a master number doesn't mean a
thing. You're evolved. No, it doesn't.
It doesn't really mean a thing unless you're spiritual. I'm starting to sound like a pajama king. But the attitude here, Lena, is that the man works his brain and his phallic energy are combined in a good hearty handshake.
Good hearty handshake.
Yeah, if you know what I mean. And so, so what he does with that sense of masturbation of the mind is that he assumes that he could activate that element out into the planet. And what you're looking for is a more of a good old fashioned courtship, a respectful entry into the element of your connection with any particular suitor. But the most, I mean, we're geared primitively to engage in sexual relationship. That's what the animals will say, you know. I mean, there is a sense of courtship in the animal kingdom, and there's a sense of nest building and puffing and huffing and fighting your rivals and things like that. But when we get into the higher aspect of what it is to be a human being, we're supposed to be able to communicate the emotional energy. And the emotional energy is the touching branches of the soul. So what you're really saying is this man is lacking a soul when it comes to courting me.
Mm-hmm.
He's only in his body. And I can't assume a connection with him as long as he stays in his body and doesn't elevate to a higher place within the soul, or I'm going to be left to rot somewhere on the sidelines after the sexual energy is lost. So, you know, that's where the energy comes from. Now, his position of life is that basically he's going to have a struggle with connecting to his soul because his numbers are so geared towards past life sexuality that he's still walking through the elements of that ego. And he's activating the energy on you because of a past life connection.
Oh, boy. Is that why he's almost been harassing me?
Yeah. Yeah, you have to kind of reach your limit, set your boundaries, and not be manipulated and transformed into an object or a victim and take a stand, you know, because predators and perpetrators of violence, even romantic violence, if you will take advantage of you. It's the law of the kingdom of the world in terms of Darwinism.
Yeah, boy. So yeah, is he going to leave me alone? Or I don't know what else to do with this guy. It's just like,
well, you don't have to do anything, Lena. You don't have to do anything. You reject him. The question is revealing to me because you're saying I feel helpless. I don't know what to do. You reject him. You reject him until you find a suitor that matches your soul. And if you can't find a suitor that matches your soul, then you have to ask yourself, where's my strength? Because you're too ambiguous. you're too doubtful mm-hmm. about what to do. Well, simple. You reject him. There's nothing else to mm-hmm. do. And if he doesn't stand for that, then you call the police and have them talk to him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's trespassing. It's trespassing up on your soul. And until you lock your door and say, you're not allowed on my property, you know, you're going to get hecklers. You're going to get trespassers. So you have to address mm-hmm. your own self now. This is a journey about who you are and where your strength is. Not to release yourself from being a human being and being compassionate and soft and feminine and all that, but you also have to be a strong woman.
Oh, well, I guess that's why he's brought in my life. So you think it was just a past life connection? He's not like this with other women.
Who cares? You know, past life to me is an overheated topic. Who cares if I have a past life with them. That doesn't impress me.
Mm-hmm.
In my world of thinking, you know, we have so many past lives with other people, but it's so big deal. You know, people tend to think, oh, I have a past life with this person. So what?
Yeah, you could have a past life with your postman. Big deal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's getting mm-hmm. past karma.
It's getting past, mm-hmm. and it's getting past the glamour of how we define what a
past
life is.
Exactly.
You know?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, thanks a lot. Thanks for clarifying that for me.
All right. Thanks, Lena. All right. We've got another caller, Neil 502. Hi there. Oh, they dropped. They dropped. We'll hang out for a minute and see if they come back in. Until then, we've got about 10 minutes left, Neil. So we'll wait to see if this caller comes back. If not, we'll quit for the day, wrap up early. But we've lost a lot of callers, a lot of people coming in and out. So probably people are back to work today and
I'm sure
maybe
that
calling surreptitiously from their job, sneaking around the corner, calling psychic shows.
But we're on this, we have a couple of minutes left, we're on this topic of existence, and maybe if people listen to our show in the archives.
They do listen in the archives, so.
The question to ask yourself is not so much where are you on this planet in terms of your body, but where are you on this planet in terms of your soul? What is your purpose? Why are you here? What do you want to do before you leave? And how will your acts transcend to a higher plane? What are you really going to take with? What can your soul take with you? Well, obviously, your soul's not going to take your house with you or your job with you or your boyfriend or girlfriend with you or your car with you.
Unless you're like twin souls. That's another topic.
Twin souls. And God forbid, you don't want to take your depression with you. You don't want to take your lack of faith with you. You want to take, your soul needs to take the things that are going to be valuable and useful on the astral plane.
Right, because if you bring that depression up with you or your issues, you're going to just be sent right back down to the planet to try to resolve what you didn't resolve in that previous lifetime.
That's right.
So,
you know, the luggage you take with you can be very weight-worthy.
Yeah.
And so you want to make sure that you travel light. And the lightness of life is love, compassion,
understanding. What is that book, The Unbearable Lightness of Being?
Well, that's The Unbearable Lightness of Being is a whole political
Right, but it's just that I know that, but the title kind of relates to the topic.
The Unbearable Lightness. You know, unbearable. It seems to be unbearable that we enter this world and get through this world with all its trials and tribulations and atrocities and dehumanizations upon one person upon another, societies upon one another, destruction, terrorism. It's hard to get through that and at the same time promote the attitude of love. There was an interesting thing that we were watching with Mandy Pranikin. About he was recently featured on YouTube or Facebook or something, where he is promoting the attitude of love and respect for refugees and the world at large, and not promoting or advocating hatred and bigotry.
Oh, you were watching that yesterday morning. Yeah. I remember I was listening, but I didn't actually physically watch it. I was just hearing it in my periphery.
Right. And I was impressed because, you know, not aside the fact that he's an actor and rather eloquent in his speech and manner and performance level, he has a deep concern for the planet and a deep concern for the people of the planet and the oppressed. And he was also advocating a sense of forgiveness and compassion. In lieu of the fact that some of our political candidates are stressing otherwise. But I don't want to get into politics. I want to get into the feature of what the aspect of the soul is and the higher element of the soul, which is, you know, connecting to the oppressed, connecting to all peoples of the planet, and not formulating prejudices or biasness, except for the fact that there are individuals that are dark and evil, and there is evil on the planet. There is terrorism on the planet. And we want to address that. But at the same time, we don't want to regroup a whole attitude, a whole nationality of people in one lump sum and start going on witch hunts and tracking people down and destroying people's religions. We need to be respectful. So that's an attitude of the soul, too, and I think a higher part of existence is that acceptance in lieu of the fact that we don't accept violence, we don't accept killing and all this mass suicidal element going on the planet right now. But aside from that, love, compassion, forgiveness, those kinds of things are very important. Tolerance. All very important, I think.
Okay, Neil. Well, I think we are out of time and we're going to continue tomorrow. Thanks, everybody, for joining us.